Up next, from the Center for Social Innovation at Stanford, Jake Harriman, founder and CEO of Nuru International, tells his story of how his time as a Special Operations Platoon Commander in the Marine Corps inspired him to create an organization that empowers local leaders to lift their rural communities out of extreme poverty. On Social Innovation Conversations.
Hi, I'm Chris Deigelmeyer, the Executive Director of the Center for Social Innovation.
And I'm Eric Nee, the Managing Editor of the Stanford Social Innovation Review.
Welcome to Social Innovation Conversations. Today, we're excited to bring you another presentation in the Stanford Discussion Series.
This podcast is brought to you by the Center for Social Innovation, a department of the Stanford Graduate School of Business that educates leaders to solve the world's toughest social and environmental problems.
And now, here is our presentation.
In April of 2003, I found myself in a fighting hole facing north along this highway, Highway 7, the main avenue of advance for American forces during the Iraqi invasion. I was a Marine with 3rd Battalion, 1st Marines, and we had just survived the first major contact of the war in a place called Nasiriyah, where we'd been ambushed and lost several Marines. We were terrified, hungry, and exhausted. Southern Iraq at the time was one of the poorest places on the earth. There was no access to health care, no access to any clean water, a terrible hunger problem. It was a desperate situation. And what had been happening as we advanced north was the regular Iraqi army had been retreating to make a final stand in Baghdad, while Saddam pushed his Fedayeen forces south, and they were going hut to hut in these rural villages, coercing poor farmers to fight us, saying basically, your children are starving right in front of you. We'll drop off a bag of rice if you'll pick up this weapon and go fight these guys 10 miles south of here. And we were fighting these guys by the hundreds and thousands. And that set the stage for what happened that morning. I got up out of my fighting hole and I started walking my lines to check on my guys because they were terrified. And I looked up on the highway and I saw a small white car approaching our position from the north. Well, I thought they'd packed explosives in the car, they were going to blow themselves up. So I grabbed 3 of my guys and we sprinted toward the car to try to get it to stop. I fired a warning shot across the car. Finally, it stopped about 50 meters out. The driver jumps out, starts waving his arms frantically and running at me. So now I think this guy strapped himself with explosives. He's going to blow himself up. So I'm yelling at him in Arabic to get down on the ground, and he's not listening. Right as I think I'm going to have to take this guy out, I look behind him, and I see a large black military truck roll up behind his little white car. 6 guys in black jump out of the truck, run up to his car, and start shooting into the car. This guy stopped dead in his tracks, started screaming, and started turning around and running back to his car. And that's when I realized what was happening. You see, this guy was one of those poor farmers who was trying to escape across our lines with his family. So I yelled at my guys to take out the Fedayeen, and I ran as fast as I could to try to save this guy's family. But by the time I got there, it was too late. I looked in the passenger side, and his wife had been shot in the face and in the chest. She was slumped over dead. He had a little infant baby girl in the back. His arm had been shot off, and she'd been shot in the face, and she was dead. He was cradling the body of his little 6-year-old daughter who'd been shot in the stomach, and she was choking on her own blood. This guy was beside himself. In 2 seconds, he lost everything he had in this world. And for the first time in the war, everything slowed down for me, and I put myself in this guy's shoes. And I thought to myself, I live in a world of choices. Where do I want to go to school? What do I want to have for breakfast? Where do I want my kids to grow up? What were this guy's choices when he woke up this morning? He could watch his 5-year-old son starve to death, or he could strap a bomb to himself or make some desperate attempt to cross our lines with his family. And then I got really, really angry. It wasn't fair. It wasn't fair that the GPS coordinates of a man's birthplace dictated the choices that he has in this world. And that was the beginning of an awakening in me, and a very different path in life. And I began to think that maybe I can make more of an impact on the war on terror by tackling what I believe is the leading contributor to the proliferation of terrorism, insurgency, and general global instability around the world, which is extreme poverty. So I made one of the toughest choices I'd ever made in my life, and I left my guys. I left the Marine Corps on this quest to take on this new war against extreme poverty. But I didn't want to have a little impact. I didn't want to help a couple villages in Africa. I wanted to build a company, a business that could scale and affect this problem on a global scale. So I decided to go to business school. And I applied to Harvard and Stanford, and by some miracle of God got in. I decided to go to Stanford Business School because of the focus on social innovation and entrepreneurship. And an amazing thing happened when I came here. Over 30 of my classmates got involved and helped me build pieces of the model. 6 faculty members got involved, provided seed funding, mentorship, and advice. And in June of 2008, I was able to raise $450,000, move to the second poorest district in all of Kenya later that year in September to found the pilot project of what became known as Nuru International, a groundbreaking new approach to fighting extreme poverty that is based on unleashing the potential of local leaders. But before I talk about that model and about leadership, I want to talk more about the problem. Because how we define the problem greatly affects how we make solutions. The World Bank defines extreme poverty as those living on less than $1.25 a day, but I have found that definition to be extremely limiting. It produces many times material solutions that simply do not last. So in my research, I kept digging. And I came across the work of these two gentlemen, Maqbool Balhaq, the former Minister of Finance in Pakistan, and Amartya Sen, a Nobel Prize-winning economist. You see, these guys believe that poverty is a lack of meaningful choices for basic human rights. Now, this definition resonated a lot more with me. It is what I had seen in combat in the eyes of that man on Highway 7 and the desperation and hopelessness that he had. But when you start solving for this definition of extreme poverty, your solutions begin to look very differently. Instead of number of bed nets or number of wells or number of schools built, your goal becomes number of leaders who are empowered to make choices, equipped to make those choices, and an enabling environment where they can then act on those choices. Now, this is a very different way to fight extreme poverty. It's about leadership. And leadership isn't sexy. Leadership isn't a gadget or a device that you can touch and feel and taste and hold in your hand. But I'm here to tell you that leadership is the key to long-term gains in this fight against extreme poverty. When I first moved to Kenya, I met a woman named Milka. And Milka, when I met her, was in a desperate situation. She had 6 children. 2 of them had died the previous year from malaria. The other 6 were starving because she could only produce 3 bags of maize on her 1 acre of land, and they needed 6 to survive. They were also affected by waterborne illnesses that were entirely preventable. Milka was in a desperate situation. She came to me and she said, "I need help." I said, "That's great. I'm here to help. I'm this smart kid from Stanford. I got all these great ideas. I got these awesome programs. I'm going to tell you what to do. I'm going to start doing these programs." And she interrupted me. She said, "Stop." I said, "Excuse me?" She said, "Stop. I need you to listen to me. Because you see, I live in this village with these 10 other women, and we've been struggling with the problems of extreme poverty for 40 years now. We have some pretty good ideas. What we need is you to help us get started." I was totally taken aback. I did not expect this in my journey to fight extreme poverty. But over the next 5 years, I built a model based on Milka's education. She began to educate me. And this model, we hope to be the world's first self-sustaining, self-scaling, integrated model to fight and end extreme poverty, based on the power of local leaders. Now, there's a lot of integrated models out there, but the problem has always been that nobody's figured out how to make them actually sustainable or scalable. And that's where Nuru's sustainability engine comes in. You see, companies and organizations require 2 things to sustain themselves: people and capital. And our sustainability engine has 2 key components to address these needs. So to address the need of capital, we create for-profit, diversified, scalable businesses in these countries. And over the time that we're there, we pour in seed capital, working capital, and world-class training to get these companies to become profitable so they fund the ongoing work of the nonprofit of the poverty-fighting initiatives long after we're gone, independent of further philanthropic capital. That way, it's completely self-contained. The second component is leaders. And our program in leadership is based on the greatest lesson that I have learned in this fight over the last 5 years, and that's this. When you first go into an area, instead of starting with what is the solution? What is the program? What is the intervention that we should start with? Start by asking who. You see, this business is about people. It's about leaders. The greatest resource in fighting extreme poverty lies within those trapped in poverty themselves. These guys are far more capable, more resourceful, more intelligent than I will ever be. And the truly lasting solutions start with them. So what we have done over the last 3 years is Nuru has piloted a brand new approach in process and curriculum to empowering local leaders to identify needs in their community, design solutions to meet those needs based on best practices from around the world, implement and scale those solutions using good project management skills, and then innovate past challenges long after we're gone using design thinking methodology. This provides a whole new level of ownership in these projects so that when we're gone, if these things break, which they will, the programs will break, these guys can fix them because they helped to build them. And that's the key. Here you can see Milka. She's one of our big success stories. She is one of 285 Kenyans that we are empowering with this leadership program. This is one of her group of farmers. Milka's a great story. She's now a field manager in our program over 500 farm families. And I'll tell you, this woman is sassy. She really cracks the whip. I steer clear of her when I'm in the project. She's an amazing story. You see, I believe in our world today that we have put a glass ceiling on the problem of extreme poverty. And I see a lot of organizations and governments out there fighting to see who can get as close to that glass ceiling as possible. But nobody really believes that we can break through the glass ceiling. She is the key to breaking through that glass ceiling. Extreme poverty is the greatest crisis of our time today, but it is one that is eminently solvable if we focus on untapping the potential of local leaders. Only by untapping the potential that is already there can we truly make sustainable gains in the war against extreme poverty. So my challenge to you today is, help me change the conversation about extreme poverty from what to who. Thank you.
You've been listening to a presentation from the Stanford Discussion Series.
This podcast is brought to you by the Center for Social Innovation, a department of the Stanford Graduate School of Business that educates leaders to solve the world's toughest social and environmental problems.
To be the first to learn about our latest published conversation and for more social innovation ideas, follow us at SOC Innovators on Twitter.
This is Chris Deigelmeyer
and Eric Nee on Social Innovation Conversations.
Thank you for listening.